NBC presents Short Story. Tonight, Conrad Aiken. A story by a Pulitzer Prize winner, the man who holds the chair of poetry at the Library of Congress. He's poet, teacher, sometime tennis reporter for the New Yorker magazine, Conrad Aiken. He deals tonight with an operating table and a strange, far journey, which will be heard immediately following this communique from the United States Marine Corps. Literally translated, esprit de corps means spirit of the corps, and in this country, the expression is most often used in referring to the United States Marine Corps. The United States Marines have an esprit de corps based on pride of outfit, confidence in fellow Marines, and respect for Marine Corps tradition, all vital ingredients in an outstanding military organization. Certainly one of the most distinctive characteristics of every Marine is this feeling of pride, and a natural outgrowth of pride is confidence. When men have confidence in themselves, their comrades, and their leaders, they become welded together into an unbeatable team. The United States Marines owe much of their success to their esprit de corps. Here now, Mr. Ocularis by Conrad Aiken.
Hello, John.
Oh, there you are, Curtin. Nearly let your seat go. Thought you weren't coming.
Oh, I didn't intend to. Not till I heard old man Venner's going to tackle an advanced mitral today.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Advanced mitral? Poor guy is practically signing his own death warrant. What's his name?
His name is Ocularis. R-Q-Laris.
Rum sort of a name.
Yes. And I gather he's a rum sort of a fellow. All kinds of money, no wife, no family. All alone in the world.
How come you're so well informed?
I've been taking an interest in the girl who's been nursing him. Oh. Little Miss Hoyle. And I've been getting precisely nowhere. She's far too wrapped up in her patient, her precious Mr. Ocularis.
There, Mr. Ocularis. You'll feel better in a moment when the injection begins to take effect.
Thank you, Miss Hoyle. Be very kind to me, patient. Will they be coming for me soon?
Very soon.
Miss Hoyle.
Yes.
You won't leave me, will you?
Of course not.
Stay with me. Take my hand and stay with me.
Your attention, please. Today, we're going to have the privilege of watching Dr. Venner operate on a case of advanced disease of the mitral valve of the heart. Our thanks are due not only to Dr. Venner, but to the patient who, in the interest of medical science, has consented to have the operation take place here in the lecture theater.
I thought you said the patient was quiet.
He was, Doctor, for a while, but...
He's had an injection, of course.
Yes, Dr. Venner.
All right, I'll try to quiet him. Mr. Ocularis, listen to me, Mr. Ocularis. You're going to be all right. You're going to be perfectly all right. So don't worry. Don't worry. Check him, please, Mitchell.
Seems all right.
Pulse?
90.
Blood pressure?
140 over 83.
All right. Let's begin.
Good morning, Miss Hoyle.
Good morning, Dr. Mitchell.
Where's your patient?
He's in the bathroom, Doctor, dressing himself.
Getting dressed on his own, eh? He must be feeling pretty well.
He's still very weak, Doctor.
That's to be expected. Rather a pity he has to set off on this trip alone.
I wish I were going with him.
Oh, good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Mr. Ocularis. And how are we feeling today?
Oh, not too bad, considering. Trifle unsteady on my pins, and a bit fuzzy in the head, but I...
Perhaps I'd better drive down to the dock with you.
Oh, thank you. It won't be necessary. An old friend is going to take me down in his car and see me safely aboard.
Good, but don't forget, you must take it easy.
Oh, I will. Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye, Mr. Ocularis, and bon voyage.
How strange and vivid the world looks from my window, Miss Hoyle.
It must, to you, today.
It looks
It looks as if it had been made freshly for me. So our musician friends are back.
How nice of them. They've come to give you a final serenade.
Well, I must say, I'd rather they hadn't.
Why, Mr. Ocularis, I thought you liked their music.
Not this tune, Miss Hoyle, not this tune. It reminds me too much of my mother, my very pretty and very wicked mother who died young. Still, they do look rather nice standing down there on the wet sidewalk. Oh, it's all so wonderful after the shower. Innumerable green fresh leaves blowing and turning. The sky strung with rain like a harp, every raindrop sparkling. I feel I don't want to leave it. I don't want to go.
But think of all the wonderful things you're going to see while you're abroad.
Oh, yes, yes. A sea voyage, Paris, Switzerland. A long time since I've seen them. Yet somehow I'm homesick already, homesick without having left home.
Is that perhaps because you're going alone?
Yes, perhaps it is.
I do think you should have someone with you.
You, for instance?
Oh, Mr. Ocularis. There, that must be your friend. I'll let him in.
Harry!
Well, if it isn't the same good old Ark. How are you, fella? You look swell.
Oh, fine, thanks. Harry, it's good of you to come.
Well, how does it feel to be back on your feet again, you old sinner?
Wonderful, Harry. Simply wonderful.
Ah, the same good old Ark.
No, not quite, I'm afraid.
Say, are you sure you're really up to this trip?
I mean... Oh, absolutely. I've been checked out by the doctors. And we better go.
Stuart! Stuart!
Yes, sir. Coming, sir.
Stuart, two double whiskeys.
Right away, sir.
As I always say, there's no bar like a ship's bar, eh, fella?
Yeah, but it's too cold in here. I can hardly keep my teeth from chattering.
Your whiskey, sir?
There. Now, drink it down, Ark. That'll soon chase that chill out of you.
I hope so. I say, Harry.
What is it? Something wrong?
No. It's just... There's that girl at the table over there by the door.
Oh, what about her?
Hey, she's very pretty. Almost beautiful. Doesn't she remind you of someone?
Oh, now you come to mention it, yeah. She looks rather like that little nurse who was looking after you at the hospital.
She doesn't remind you of anyone else?
No.
You never saw my mother, did you, Harry?
Why, no.
No, of course you couldn't have. She died so young. I just...
Oh, look. Look, we've embarrassed the poor girl with our staring. She's getting up to leave.
No, I think not. She isn't going to leave.
You're right. She's coming our way.
Hey, this is bad, fella.
Oh, pardon me, gentlemen, but you've been looking at me as if you recognized me.
Please accept our most humble apologies, madam.
Our behavior has been inexcusable.
Oh, no, please don't apologize. You see, well, I have such a poor memory for names, and I was afraid you might think me very rude.
You mean that...
I mean that I'm almost certain I've met you somewhere before, but I have to admit I can't remember your name.
My name is Ocularis.
Ocularis.
Yes, and my friend here is Harry Freeman.
I'm Clarice Dean.
Miss Dean?
Won't you have a drink with us?
Well, thank you, but I must go down to my cabin.
Then perhaps we can get together later on, Miss Dean?
That would be nice. Goodbye, gentlemen.
Au revoir.
Well, that isn't the strangest thing.
All ashore, it's going ashore. All ashore, it's going ashore.
Well, that's it, fella. Time for me to go.
Harry, Do you have to?
Goodbye, old fella, and take care of yourself.
Goodbye, Harry. Goodbye. So we meet again, Miss Dean?
Yes, Mr. Ocularis, we meet again.
Well, it was thoughtful of them to seat us together, wasn't it?
Yes. You're alone?
Yes, quite alone. And you?
Yes, I'm on my own, too. Is this a pleasure trip for you, Mr. Ocularis?
Pleasure? No, not exactly. I'm convalescing. You see, I'm just out of the hospital after an operation. I was given up for dead. For 6 months, I've given myself up for dead. If you've ever been seriously ill, you'll know the feeling. That sort of posthumous feeling.
You don't look like an invalid.
Oh, you mean that? Really?
Of course.
Your soup, sir?
Thanks, Stuart.
Do you think we'll have a good voyage, Stuart?
Well, madam, I don't like to be a Jeremiah, but...
What do you mean?
Well, you see, madam, maybe I shouldn't say it, There's a corpse on board, and I never yet knew a voyage with a corpse aboard that we didn't have bad weather.
Oh, Stuart, you're just superstitious.
Oh, no, no, that's very ancient superstition, Miss Dean. Maybe it's true. With a corpse in the hold, perhaps some disaster may befall us. We may run into fog and icebergs. Remember the Titanic with the band playing Nearer My God to Thee on the afterdeck while she went down?
Oh, Mr. Oculus, please.
And the Empress of Ireland with all those people trapped in the smoking room with only one door between themselves and life, and that door locked for the night by the deck steward and the deck steward missing.
Please,
are so many.
Please, you'll have to excuse me. I must go now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I bored you with my silly talk.
No, it's not that.
Well, then, I'll see you in the lounge later on, perhaps?
Of course.
Mr. Ocularis.
Yes, what? Where am I?
Safe in bed in your cabin, sir.
It's morning.
I brought you your tea.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Steward.
By the way, sir, I suppose you haven't come across a bunch of keys here in your cabin.
Keys? Well, no. Why?
Well, mine are missing, sir. The ones that open the pantries and the freezers. I must have laid them down somewhere.
No, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid I haven't seen them, Steward.
Oh, well, I didn't really think you had, sir. Only I thought it wouldn't do any harm to ask.
Oh, no, of course not, and I do hope you'll find them.
Oh, they'll turn up sooner or later, so never fear.
Have you ever done any sleepwalking, Miss Dean?
No, I never have.
That's the funny part of it. I never had either until last night. Never in my life. I hardly ever even dream. So this really rather frightened me.
Tell me about it, Mr. Ocularis.
I dreamed at first that I was walking alone in a wide plain covered with snow. It was growing dark. It was very cold. My feet were frozen and numb, and I was lost. I came then to a signpost. At first it seemed there was nothing on it, nothing but ice. Just before it grew finally dark, however, I made out on it the one word, Polaris.
The pole star.
Yes, and it gave me, in the dream, I mean, an awful feeling of despair. And then the dream changed. I dreamed I was standing outside my stateroom in the little dark corridor and trying to find the door handle to let myself in. I was in my pajamas, and again, I was very cold. And at that point, I woke up.
Yes.
The extraordinary thing is, that's exactly where I was. And now the question is, where had I been? It's very singular.
Certainly, yes. Do you think, Mr. Ocularis, that we might go into the lounge now? I find the darkness here on deck a little depressing.
Why, of course, Miss Dean. We'll go in and listen to the ship's orchestra. We'll listen to the orchestra in the lounge. Ah, good heavens. Can I never escape from that horrible sentimental tune? The last thing I heard in America and the last thing I want to hear.
But don't you like it?
Well, when I heard it at the hospital, when was that? It made me feel like crying. Three old Italians tootling it there in the rain. Oh, I suppose like most people, Miss Dean, I'm afraid of my feelings.
I'm only a ship's doctor, Mr. Ocularis, and I don't pretend to know much about the workings of the human mind. But if you'll tell me about your dream, I think it may help to relieve your anxiety.
Last night was the second night in succession. It started with the engines. The rhythm of the engines became positively a persecution. It gave me no rest. It followed me like a hound of heaven. It drove me out into space and across the Milky Way, and then back home by way of Betelgeuse. It was cold there. I sparkled with frost. It felt like a Christmas tree. I was barefoot. There were icicles on my fingers and toes. Snowflakes and tinsel blew past me, and always the perpetual throbbing. The iteration of sound was like a pain. There were circles and repetitions of light. The feeling as of everything coiling inward to a center of misery.
Go on, Mr. Ocularis.
Suddenly, it was dark and I was lost. I was groping. I touched the cold, white, slippery woodwork with my fingernails, hunting for the electric light switch. The throbbing was again the throbbing of the ship's engines. And I was almost home. Almost home. Another corner to round, a door to be opened, and there I'd be, safe. And sound. Safe in my father's home.
And that was the end of your dream?
Yes. It was at that moment I woke up. I was in the corridor that leads to the dining salon, and I was seized with such a pure terror as I had never known. My heart felt as if it would stop beating. My back was toward the dining salon, so apparently I had just come from it. I was in my pajamas. The corridor was dim. Thank heavens it was deserted. Not a soul. Not a sound, but the engines. I was only 50 yards from my stateroom, and I felt with luck I could get to it unseen. And I did. In a cold sweat, I crept into my bunk, and I lay there shivering and thinking, where have I been?
A nasty experience, no doubt, Mr. Ocularis.
You don't think it's anything serious, do you?
No. I'm sure it's nothing serious, Mr. Ocularis.
Miss Dean, Clarice, please, may I call you Clarice?
Of course you may, Mr. Ocularis.
Clarice, it happened again. It happened again last night.
I know.
What? Well, how do you know? Who told you?
No one told me.
Then you...
I saw you myself.
You? Saw me?
Yes. You see, last night, I was worried about you. I waited in the shadow near the door of your cabin. I saw you come back safely, and I thought it better not to interfere. I heard it's dangerous to interfere with sleepwalkers.
Oh, Clarice, if you could understand how it felt at that moment...
When you'd gone back into your cabin, I waited for a while and then came away. Just as I came to the corner of the corridor near the stairs, I noticed something on the floor. It seemed to me that you had dropped it.
What was it you found?
I have it here. Look.
A bunch of keys. No. No. No!
You sent for me, Captain?
Oh, yes, Steward. I understand you've lost some keys.
That's right, Captain. I've mislaid them somewhere.
I've reason to believe they're being used to no good purpose. Any idea who might have got hold of them?
Well, sir, I did think I might have laid them down in one of the staterooms, 27 on E-deck, Mr. Ocularis.
Oh, I see.
He's been very ill, sir.
Yes, yes. I think it might be a good idea for you to keep an eye on that stateroom tonight. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, sir.
They're playing that thing again, Therese. How can they do it to me? As if I hadn't enough to bear with my sleepwalking and the cold and the keys.
Hush, Mr. Ocularis. You really shouldn't let your mind dwell on your troubles, you know.
Well, how can I help it when every time I look at you, I think of her?
Of whom? Of whom do I remind you?
Of my mother. My very pretty and very wicked mother who died young. That's why I can't bear this tune. It brings back all the dreadful misery of those days.
She's been dead a long time?
Yes. Yes, I was 9 when she died.
And she was unhappy?
She was unhappy? Now, what on earth made you say that?
Why shouldn't I? Is there anything very extraordinary about it?
Yes, because somehow that had never occurred to me before, that she was unhappy. I've always thought of it the other way around, that she made us so unhappy, father and me.
Oh, I see.
She and my Uncle David, my father's younger brother. You see, I found out about them as children do. I was 9 that summer. One hot July morning, he came to her through the rose garden. I saw and heard everything. He had come to take her out on the yacht for the day. When she heard him, she came out on the balcony and they spoke words of love. And then Uncle David saw my head peeking out from behind the bush. They went off together on the yacht, but Uncle David was certain that sooner or later I would tell.
And you were only 9.
It was one of those things that stain the mind forever. My mother's face with love in her eyes, the scene in the garden, the hurricane which followed. All my life I've been trying to make some sense of it.
Poor Mr. Ocularis.
It's queer how things get twisted. It's almost as if I were to blame, as if I were guilty. The sin was hers and his. The Furies pursue me.
But you're not to blame. Don't you see? It's simply because you loved her.
Oh, how wonderfully understanding you are. Who but you would have thought she was unhappy? You know, Clarice, I'm years older than you, centuries older. But is it possible that we are falling in love?
Yes, I think it is, Mr. Ocularis.
Take my hand, Clarice. Feel how cold it is.
Yes, poor thing.
Warm it. Warm it before I leave you. It's been to Polaris and back, you know. And tonight... tonight it may have to go again.
No. No. No.
Last night, Clarice, it was the same. Same dream of going round a star. Polaris, Betelgeuse, the same terrible coldness and helplessness. That awful whistling curve.
And when you woke up, where were you when you woke up? Tell me. Don't be afraid.
I was at the bottom of the stairway that leads down from the pantries to the hold, past the refrigerating plant. It was dark, and I was crawling on my hands and knees.
Oh, do you think?
I know. And so do you. Once more, and I'll be looking down into it. And there I will see myself.
Just a minute, Stuart. Let me get this straight. You kept watch outside Mr. Arcularis's cabin. He came out in his pajamas, and you followed him down to the big freezer room. He used your keys to unlock the doors along the way.
Yes, sir. When he got to the door of the big freezer room, he unlocked it and went in and got down on his knees beside the coffin. Then he started to beat on him with his fist, sir.
How long did that go on?
Oh, only a few moments, sir. Then he turned around and started back.
And you followed him back to his cabin?
Yes. When he got a few yards from the freezer door, he seemed to wake up-like, and after that, he fair ran back to his stateroom.
Well, I think I'd better have a word with Mr. Ocularis myself.
No. No, it can't be.
It is, Clarice. It is.
But how do you know? How do you know where the...
Don't be afraid to say it, my dear. You mean the coffin.
How could you know where it is?
I don't need to know, I suppose. You see, I'm already almost there.
Ah, yes, Mr. Ocularis.
What do you want with me?
Well, there's a certain matter that I feel I really must discuss with you.
What do you mean? What is it?
Mr. Ocularis... have you been sleeping well since you've been aboard this ship?
What are you driving at? Tell me, what are you driving at?
If you'll please answer my question, I'll explain.
No, I have a right to know what you're accusing me of.
But, my dear Ocularis, I'm not accusing you of anything. I'm simply
trying... Oh, yes, you are. You are accusing me of something, and I know what it is. I know what you're thinking.
But, my dear sir,
You think it was my fault that they drowned? You think my spying drove them to it? You think I was to blame for what happened?
Mr. Ocularis, you're entirely mistaken.
I'll tell you exactly what happened. The morning after he came to her in the garden. The morning after the hurricane. It was just before daybreak, and the bay was calm again. I rowed up the marsh channel towards Pulpit Rock. I knew that Mother and Uncle David had sailed that way in the yacht. I rowed about halfway up the channel when I saw the yacht's tender. It was still tied to the yacht. The yacht was sunk there, lying a little on her port side, with the roof of the cabin about 2 feet underwater. I could see it all, quite plainly. The cabin door was shut. I sculled around to the starboard side where I could look in through the forward porthole. Inside, I could see something pink floating close to the glass. I knew it was my mother's dress. The dress she'd worn the day before. That's all, sir. I didn't touch anything, sir. I left everything just as it was. Everything.
Mr. Ocularis.
Yes.
I'm afraid you're not quite yourself this morning.
That's right. I do feel very weak. I have a pain around my heart.
You've been very ill, and we must take care of you. You've been walking in your sleep. It may not happen again, but if it does, I'm afraid you'll have to sleep in the ship's hospital.
Yes, yes, I understand.
Don't worry about anything, Mr. Ocularis. We'll take care of you. You're going to be all right. You're going to be perfectly all right. So don't worry. Don't worry. Don't worry.
He told me not to worry, Clarice.
I'm sure he was right. There's nothing to worry about.
Oh.
Nothing at all.
Of course. We must be gay, Clarice.
What would you say to some champagne?
That would be wonderful.
Steward! Steward! Champagne! Champagne! Bring us champagne! Oh, perhaps even now, my dear, it will all turn out to be nothing more than a nightmare from which we'll both awake.
If only that could be so.
The same as before. Just the same. The long, magnificent, delirious swoop of dizziness. The great circle. The swift pathway to Arcturus. All as before. But now infinitely more rapid. Never have I had such speed. Beyond the moon, past the North Star in a twinkling, swooping in a long, bright curve round Pleiades. Hello there, old Betelgeuse. I'm off to the little blue star that points the way to the unknown, forward into the untrodden. Courage, old man. In no time, we'll be back to Clarice, back to Mother. Oh, if only I don't wake. If only I don't wake in that time and space, somewhere and nowhere, cold and dark, and music sobbing among the palms of a lonely... If only the coffers of the poor... No, not coffers, not coffers, but light. Delight, supreme white and brightness, and above all, whirling lightness above all, and freezing...
Gone, Dr. Benner.
I know.
I'm sorry, gentlemen. The patient is dead.
Gentlemen, you've had the privilege of watching Dr. Benner attempt one of the most delicate operations in all surgery. Unfortunately, the patient was unable to support the strain imposed by the administration of the anesthetic for a period long enough to enable Dr. Benner to complete the operation. That'll be all for today, gentlemen.
Well, that's that, my friend.
Poor devil.
What do you mean, poor devil? We've all got it coming to us, haven't we? He was lucky. He died under anesthetic. He didn't feel a thing.
Didn't he? I wonder.
You have heard Mr. Ocularis by Conrad Aiken. The second broadcast in a new dramatic series, NBC Presents Short Story. The adaptation was by Gerald Noxon. In tonight's cast, Ocularis was John Daner. Georgia Ellis was heard in the dual role of Miss Hoyle and Clarice Dean, Donald Woods as Dr. Mitchell and Ship's Doctor, and Jan Arvin as the Captain and Dr. Venner. Kurt was Lee Millar, John was Tom McKee, Harry was Don Randolph, and the steward was Charles Davis. Your announcer, Don Stanley. The director of NBC Presents Short Story is Andrew C. Love. Next week, the Hollywood scene, in the special idiom of F. Scott Fitzgerald. Mr. Fitzgerald's story, Crazy Sunday. Hear it next week. Meanwhile, bear in mind this message from the United States Marine Corps. The history of the United States Marine Corps is more than a glorious record of heroic deeds of valor. The history of the Marines is a history of men. Men whose faithful devotion to the ideals of their country and Corps have caused them to be honored and respected throughout the world. The proud traditions which set the Corps apart become a coveted heritage to every man who wears the globe and anchor. And the Marine motto, Semper Fidelis, always faithful, becomes a lasting creed. You'll find leaders in government, industry, education, in every walk of life who proudly bear the mark of the United States Marines. There's something about the Corps which fosters leadership, self-reliance, and confidence among its members. In the final analysis, these are the qualities that make a good Marine and a good American. The following statement was received from General C.B. Cates, Commandant of the United States Marine Corps. With the annual appeal for funds by the Red Cross, every American can render a special service to someone less fortunate than himself. I urge all hands to be as generous in their support as their means will permit. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.